David Chick, producer T-Rex.
I used to do a lot of that through StreamYard.
Yes.
And feed it out to whatever social media I needed to. Especially during the pandemic, I did a lot of that.
Give us heartfelt moments. Give us moments of levity and of seriousness, of joy and feelings. May you, Lord, be in us through these next few minutes. In Jesus' name. Okay, so let's do it in three, two. I'll just do a clap. Three, two, one. So welcome, everybody, to the Trigg Podcast with Joy. My name is David Trigg, and I am so excited to be here with you. As you know, it is August. Today is August 2nd. And I am here joined by my good friend, new friend, David Harris. David Harris is the Vice President of Church Health at Transformation Ministries, Church Health and Development. So he's been a pastor for 24 years. That's very near and dear to my heart because I've also loved pastors. He's also working with Thrive Leadership Network. And what I love most is that not only does he have a doctorate in preaching and communication, but he often goes around different places, conferences and colleges, teaching and speaking on the art of communication and preaching. So welcome, David, to the show. Thank you for being here. How are you doing today?
I'm well, David. Thanks for having me. And you're in a little better shape than I am. In Southern California, it's not 185,000 degrees like it is here in my home in Arizona. So I'm enjoying it vicariously, my friend.
Yeah, we are pretty, we do feel sorry for everybody that's not here in SoCal. So my condolences to you with the Arizona weather. And our dear friend, Kirk, we feel even worse for him, right, in Texas. So.
Oh, yes. I was there a couple of weeks ago. I was like, I'm going to go home and cool off. So
now I have to ask you before we get into the show, do you have a pool? How do you refresh there in Arizona?
Sure. Well, as I joke with my friends from the Midwest where I grew up, you know, everybody in Arizona has at least one pool. And my pool is 94 degrees as we're talking, but it feels good when it's 112, 115 out. And then, you know, air conditioning, I joke, I grew up in the Midwest where you had some harsh winters. So I just call it reverse winter. But at least, you know, 105 degrees doesn't hurt. Five below hurts. So we manage. My dogs don't like it because we can't walk them as much because it burns their little feet. But other than that, we get by, you know. And then for about 8.5 months out of the year, it's like living in even better weather than you are, my friend. So we tolerate June, July, and August.
Now, because I am obviously an immigrant, I hear a little bit of an accent in there, a little bit of something. So tell me a little bit about where that comes from.
Yeah, so it comes from two places. I grew up in the hills of Southern Ohio. So there's a little bit of that Appalachian accent. And then I spent some time in Christian music, the old quartet music back in the day, and all the people from the South, and I had to learn to harmonize with them. So I had to develop a little bit of a Southern accent intentionally. And who knew then that life and ministry would lead me into the South? And I spent 10 years living in Charlotte, North Carolina, and 3 years living in Atlanta, Georgia. So I got a little bit of that. And I married a California girl, so I stayed out West, but she still says about half the time, I can't understand you. I'm like, shut up. So.
That is awesome. Yeah, my wife deals with that often, mostly because when I'm hanging out with my family, we speak a foreign language to her. So that's pretty
literally
I can relate to you. You know, like, you know, because accents in terms of Spanish, obviously it all sounds like Spanish to most people. But for us, you can tell, like, you're from South America, Central America, Northern Mexico, Southern Mexico. I mean, it's quite the thing. So I can understand.
Yeah, no, I understand all that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, David, I thank you again for being here. We met through, you could say through Transformation Ministries. Sure. You could say through our dear friend, Kirk Mackey, and also through just our common experience of church ministry and even some of the projects that we've been talking about a bit the last few weeks. But I especially feel thankful for you because you are helping leaders in churches become healthy. I think there was a book that I know my father-in-law would recommend to me, the Something Healthy Church, I remember. And I forget the name of the guy, but there was this whole series back in the 90s that churches, pastors would go to these conferences on church health. And that felt so foreign back then. But now, of course, you're doing that. I wanted to ask you the first question is, speaking of your faith and church background, what is it that church health looks like? And then specifically, how does that come? Where does that come from in terms of your own personal faith?
Well, let me go with the second part first. I was very fortunate. I grew up in a Christian home. Both of my parents were local church board members and leaders. I gave my life to Jesus when I was 4 years old, David. I don't have some big sexy story that I tell at conferences about sex, drugs, and rock and roll, right? I'm kind of vanilla. What I do have is a story of God's faithfulness lived out through a middle-class family who raised their children in church, and what God did in my life when I gave it to him when I was just before I turned five. When I was 10 years old in a summer camp missionary service, I told God he could do anything he wanted with my life. When I was 15, I felt that call to ministry, and it initially manifested itself in music, but then led me to into the pastoral and preaching stuff that I do now, not knowing. And God's a wild driver, but ministry's been good to me. It's literally taken me around the globe multiple times. I've pastored in the Midwest, the South, the West Coast. And so I've not only made this the life of ministry, it's been my livelihood, and I get to enjoy all the benefits of doing those kinds of things. And I joke with people in the role I'm at now, actually not so much a joke. I said it jokingly once, then it actually resonated, so I quit joking. I've got enough ministry success to give me credibility when I'm with some people, but I've got enough scars in ministry to give me understanding. And so people listen to me because of my credibility, but I listen to them because of my scars. And so I'm enjoying the seat that I'm in. And church health is a unique thing. And we believe at TM, that Transformation Ministries, that healthy pastors build healthy churches. If a pastor is unhealthy in his mental health, which is a hot topic these days, dealing with anxiety, depression, and a lot of those byproducts, if he has an unhealthy marriage, if he's got unhealthy practices or work habits, then the church is not going to be functioning optimally. Now, no person is perfect, but that's why we provide coaches. That's why we provide the room for transparency. And that's one of the benefits of Transformation Ministry. A pastor can come to me, be transparent about things that she or he is dealing with, and then we can walk with them, where in some denominations, you go and you're transparent about a struggle or an issue in your life, in your marriage, a signature sin that you find yourself wrapped up in, and you know, you're out, not out of your church, you're out of your livelihood. And so we work really hard about scaling those kinds of things, walking with people so that we can build healthy pastors, and we provide coaches for all of them. And then these pastors, then these churches can become healthy. And so it's a two steps forward, one step back kind of thing, but I'm having a blast, and I'm committing a good bit of my life to this these days.
That's beautiful. Thank you for doing that. It is something that has benefited me in my leadership. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned, the coaches that God has provided and the friendships. I'll never forget Ty, our common friend Ty. Remember we went to his famous soup plantation once. So Ty, if you're listening to this, this is a good story. And so he had all of us sit around, and he'll tell stories and laugh and hug us and love us and pay for our food, all that stuff, right? And then at the end, he's like, "Hey guys, I got some things for you guys." So we're all like little kids at Christmas, like, "Okay, what's Ty have for us this time?" And so he opens the back of his truck, and he has like 10 boxes of books. Of course, all from like 1985, you know, which we have like 10 copies, which we'll never read, books that we're trying to get rid of. And so because I am a 3 on the Enneagram, you know, I try to fit in with everyone. I'm like, "Okay, Ty, I'll bring in one of your boxes." I came home and literally, sorry, Ty, dumped it in the trash only because I had already 10 copies. But that's my beautiful friend, Ty. And any similar stories that you may have, not about Ty, but maybe about pastors and their books?
Well, first of all, Ty pastors in Dana Point. You open the windows and this church overviews, literally looks over the Pacific Ocean. I spoke at a conference there a year ago. I don't think anybody listened to me. All 500 pastors were looking out the window at the Pacific, right? Is there a whale out there? So Ty actually has paid a price to be there, but done a phenomenal job. Here's the first thing I popped in my mind. Don't throw those books away. Take them to Goodwill, donate them. You get incredible tax donation to, tax benefits on your income taxes each year for books, truly, more so than shirts and shoes. So, they're trying to educate America, apparently. I've got some older mentor pastors who, you know, when they're retiring, they're cleaning out their libraries, and they'll say, "Hand me a box of books." And, you know, some of the good ones I've had, and some of them have been around when they started in ministry 50 years ago. It's like, "Okay, guys, I appreciate it. Right. Well, here we come."
Exactly.
But, you know, here's the thing. This actually touches on something that's very important. And you and I hadn't talked about this in our prep for this conversation, but continuing education formally and informally for pastors. You know, I was taught when I was in my early 20s from a senior sage kind of pastor, "David, Leaders are learners. Always be a learner. And if you're a learner, you'll never get stale. You'll never become irrelevant, and you'll always be fresh. And how true is that in a, not just in the 21st century, but in a post-COVID type of thing, and how we're all learning together. So I benefited from that kind of advice. So I take this type of stuff, even if it's a box of books that look antiquated, you know, I can leaf through and find a little bit here and there. There's some great nuggets from people of old. And here's the other thing. A lot of the stuff I see in some of those books is it's written differently, but it's the same messages and conversations that we're having today that's just wrapped in a different package.
Yeah, very true. So speaking of post-COVID, kind of the meat of our time, I wanted to spend talking about kind of the pitfalls and the opportunities, and starting with the positive and really focusing primarily on the positives. I think we all are familiar with the pitfalls, but I mean, both are important, but you see a lot and you are perhaps more aware than anyone on what pastors and leaders are dealing with post-pandemic. And my guess is that there's this, maybe this, this confusion on, do we go back and try to rebuild the church of old? Are there any maps for the future or for the church of the future, et cetera? And then, of course, the dynamics of staffing and budgets and buildings. I guess my question was, and more of a conversation for you, David, to share with our audience, is post-pandemic, what are the opportunities and pitfalls that you see?
Yeah, so start out in left field a little bit. In Joshua chapter 1, the book of Joshua,
uh-oh, did I lose you there for a second? I think you froze.
You know, went up on the mountain and got stuff from God, part of the Red Sea.
You froze for a second. I'm sorry, David. Can you go back just a bit? You froze for a second.
Sure. So what I was saying was Joshua chapter 1 opens with these words, after the death of Moses, five words, seemingly innocent words, and yet they are so telling. Because for 40 years, this entire nation, this Exodus movement, several million people had only known one leader, the guy who went and got the part, you know, they parted the Red Sea, got the Ten Commandments, the pillar of fire by night, the cloud by day, the man in the morning, the quail in the afternoon, all came through Moses. And now Moses is gone, and there's fear and there's uncertainty, and they're facing a crisis. And before they can get to the promised land and all God has for them, now you got all these people who weren't there when the Red Sea was parted, who didn't go every Tuesday and Thursday afternoon at 4 o'clock to take swimming lessons at the YMCA. They didn't know how to build boats or bridges, and they've got the Jordan River at flood stage. And Joshua has to basically do what Moses did. And then when you go on the other side of it, they've got the promised land, but oops, there's Jericho and it's fortified and they've got all that stuff. So it was a whole new day to get to the goodness and the promises of God, that once they got through those things, everything that God promised them all of a sudden becomes their reality. And I think that the pandemic didn't create certain crises within the church. It only accentuated some of the things that were already happening between church and culture that were somewhat on the unhealthy stage. But every time change is brought into our paths, it is always an opportunity for the positive. And so a lot of the positives were churches that didn't even, you know, record their services and post them on Facebook or whatever. All of a sudden they're live streaming, right? And now they're reaching millions of people. I used to, during the pandemic, I would host just sitting in the same seat I'm sitting in my home, a thing through StreamYard that went out around the globe. And I would have about 1,500 people join me in a prayer meeting every Wednesday night during the pandemic. I was leading a Muslim in Bangladesh because his father and grandfather had COVID. I was led an atheist in France to Jesus. I was ministering to people in Mexico, plus all the people here domestically. So all of a sudden, we have unprecedented opportunities to impact the globe. We also have an opportunity to see what were some of the things that we were majoring on that mattered to us inside the church, but didn't matter to the community at large. And we got a great opportunity to find out that kind of stuff. And one of the things we learned is some people were coming to church just out of duty and obligation. And when they were given the opportunity to come or come back, they chose not to. Now we've got to deal with some realities. What's that take? The positive side of that is pretty much all churches are doing some form of a hybrid. And there's discussion about how viable that is or not. But here's what I tell people. If you're impacting others who are sitting at home with a cup of coffee or they're riding in their car, listening to it in their headset, you have an opportunity to touch their lives. And then if you can create then what I would call bridge opportunities, not inviting them into your church next Sunday. While a lot of that's happening, it's probably not happening effectively. Invite them to something where the things that matter in scripture and the things that matter in culture intersect. For instance, can you go and work at a local food bank or something with foster children or at a rescue mission and invite those people there? And when you do that, you're doing two things simultaneously. Number one, you're getting to serve, and all of us are called to serve to some degree or another. Secondly, you are vicariously creating an atmosphere and a culture of assimilation. And so next thing you know, those people are building relationships with the people from inside the church, and they've already watched you online a little bit, which is how they learn. They're curious about what you're doing in the community, because most people care about their communities. They want better schools. They want better neighborhoods. They want better opportunities to help those less fortunate. So now you're building a bridge into that understanding. And if you build a bridge to that understanding, and then you can connect them with yourself, it's just a short matter of time in most cases where you can connect them to the church, because they're already friendly towards your message because they've listened to you online a few times. And so when we begin to think about how do we optimize those opportunities. And a couple of words that scare churches in my experience over the years, we have a tendency to want to hyper-spiritualize everything. But sometimes churches get scared of words like strategic or intentional. And yet I think God was very strategic when he brought Jesus to humankind and made him our ultimate sacrifice. I think God was very intentional in providing the Savior for my sin. And I think there's a whole lot of stuff in the Bible that shows that God was both strategic and intentional and spiritual at the same time. So we can build a lot of those kinds of opportunities that you really couldn't optimize pre-pandemic, because people are still curious on this side of the pandemic. And of course, you know, the church struggled. I don't know if your listeners are aware, but during the pandemic, or about the first 6 to 8 months of 2020, starting in March, 1,600 churches a month were closing their doors. And so you had a lot of that stuff going on. So now we have to understand, okay, why were we closing our doors? What were some things we can learn from that? And then how do we optimize what that brings to the table in terms of the people we're reaching? The other side of the coin is, while lots of churches have seen a decline in attendance overall, they've seen an incredible increase in visitors or guests to their church who had never been there before, because the pandemic also resonated with some deep-seated things in people that made them just a little bit fearful of life. And ideally, the message of the gospel is a message of hope, and we can bring hope into those situations where people find fear, because fear and hope don't coexist. And so there's incredible opportunities for newcomers to the church. And instead of churches focusing who they lost, they should be focusing on who they're gaining. And then how do you build bridges into the lives of the people that are now coming to you and those like them?
Wow. You know, I've been teaching the last year in high schools, math and English to English learners. And we just got this email this week in terms of going back to high school and how to approach high schoolers, not only in the public system, but even in the church. This email had a link to even church stuff. But even for the schools, the advice was to not go too fast, to slow down for students, to get him into small groups and not just speak to them at a large group event or at a rally or in the auditorium, to break them into small groups, to not change too many things in terms of the curriculum that they had last year or the subject or the books, to use familiarity so that they can kind of get out of the panic mode of things moving and changing every week. Is that kind of what you're talking about in terms of church? Meaning that as we come out of this and we become strategic and we become intentional, do you find that we need to have more change or less change? Tell me more about change in general coming out of the pandemic.
Yeah, great question. So on one hand, what I think the pandemic has caused the church to do in a very, very healthy way is go back to some of the basics.
Right.
With all these conferences and I don't mean this in the least bit critical, because I come from this world, you know, mega churches and their influence and all of that. Sometimes churches that weren't scaled that way were trying to mimic those things and it wasn't working. And so it's caused the church in general, even those larger churches, to come back to some basics. You know, we're going to We're going to pass, dribble, and shoot. We're going to punt, pass, and kick. So church is, okay, we're going to reach people. We're going to serve our community. And then here's the thing that got lost, that it, during the pandemic, you could do because of Zoom rooms and things like that. We're going to disciple people who think they know a lot about the Bible, but they know a lot about church, not so much about the Bible. And so we've come back to basics there. And then at the other side of the coin is it's caused us to also be creative in how we scale those basics. I think of the things that can be done with children and some of the churches that were doing like online cooking shows for children. And what we've learned this side of the pandemic is that families didn't necessarily go back to the churches they were attending pre-pandemic. They went to the churches that caught the attention of their children during the pandemic.
Yeah.
So like I've got a friend and she's very creative and she was doing an online cooking show for 15 minutes twice a week to, you know, elementary age students. And they would gather the stuff and make the cookies or whatever she was doing. And then she would do a gospel story. And when their church started regathering post-pandemic, they didn't have all the people who were there before, but they had this whole influx of new people because those kids were attracted to what she was doing online. So so you've got basics and creativity kind of finding synergy without being in a big budget, without being overblown, and you can scale them accordingly instead of trying to imitate what you're seeing done in other places.
Wow. That's beautiful because both of us being creatives, it kind of taps into that creativity that's in us and in a lot of people, children's ministries or musicians, of course. And I remember during the pandemic when I was at my church, our children's families pastor, she did this thing called, I think it was called Alfredottini or Alfredini. It was an Italian chef and her husband's name is Alfredo.
Okay.
So, and so she got the idea from his name and Italian food. And he had a big mustache and a top hat and a chef's outfit. And it was Muppets. Her and her two daughters would get on our church studio in my office, actually, not a studio, but my office. And she would have these puppets. And it took a while for the church to kind of like, okay, what is this? You know, this is not the traditional thing. But as the church reopened, we saw a lot of those kids come to the actual in-person events because of Alfredottini. And then she, you know, I wasn't there at the time when the church fully opened. But my guess is that she probably brought those puppets out again in person, whether it was VBS or some Wednesday night family night, because to your point, that was a connection that was genuine from the heart, creative, fun, not another iPad and more to-dos, right. And yet it was gospel driven. And so that's a beautiful thing. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. And you used the term creatives.
Yes.
Pre-pandemic, only churches of certain size or aspiration were doing much with technology and live streaming and different things that they were doing on social media outlets. And the pandemic caused many churches to have to create that. Now, the good news there is you've got all these people who have interest in electronics and creativity who may not have really had a place in the church to serve or to be leaders. You know, maybe they aren't comfortable standing up front doing announcements or leading a Bible study. They might have attended the men's group, but, you know, they weren't leading it. But now they are finding places where they can employ their talents and their spiritual gifts in ways that benefit the church. And so that kind of creativity also opened up then a whole new leadership pipeline and a whole new engagement pipeline in the average American church, which didn't exist in the pre-COVID situations. So I think that's really cool as well.
Now, here's maybe a question that maybe presses in a little bit more.
Okay.
Don't you think that some churches should die and should just not be around anymore post-pandemic? And that some churches should thrive and we should invest into maybe less churches. Here's why I mentioned that. It's not kind of coming out of left field, although it may sound that way. Victory Outreach, which is a church I've been a part of for 2 years, post my church, they are a church of a network of about 300 churches, I think, here in the LA area. So a ton of little tiny churches. And the their senior elder, Pastor Sonny, he's in his 80s now. And he's a founder back in 1969 in East LA. He started Victory Outreach. And this last year, 2022-23, he did a whole talk that he sent to all of us leaders about him closing churches. So, for example, in Santa Ana, there were four Victory Outreach churches, all of like 20 people. And basically what he said is we need to have three of them close and have the one take the people from those three churches so that that church becomes healthy, stronger, better production, better leadership, better volunteers, and that church can become a base, is what they call it, to Orange County. So it's no longer just Santa Ana, but now they're trying to build, they call them base churches, to a whole region. So that, to me, at first I thought that was shocking, just the language of intentionally letting churches die, right? We're like the opposite in the evangelical Baptist movement. Like, no, 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 don't let that happen. I mean, what's going to happen to our elderly people, right? And all that stuff. But I found a lot of wisdom and it's really worked. We've seen a growth in our church from 30 to 50 to 80 to 100 people in the last year because of evangelism, which VO is very known for, but also of these other churches being intentionally shut down. What do you think of that strategy, and do you see any validity in that?
I see a lot of validity in that, and I want to be careful how I frame this because I don't want people to hear me say something I'm not saying.
Yes,
I think knowing your creative and your music background and your reach, you probably have a good number of Gen Z and millennial listeners. Yep. And one of the things I know about those of you who come from that demographic is you appreciate real transparency. One of the things you don't like about the baby boomers is that everything always had to be bigger, brighter, louder, faster, but it never had to be real. And you don't like that. So here's some real talk. I think that there are a lot of churches that would serve the kingdom better by selling their property and allowing a qualified organization to use that money to plant new churches or to pour into a consolidated type of situation, what we would call a church revitalization. I think that there are a lot of people hold on to those churches for multiple reasons. One of them is positive. You know, their parents or their grandparents gave a lot of themselves, their lives, their dollars to serving that church, and they absolutely love it. And that leads to a grieving process. And so if those of us who are involved in maybe walking with them through that, we have to treat it like the loss of a parent or a grandparent as a form of grief, not as a form of resistance or rebellion or ugliness, because that hurts. Then there are those who just hold on to these churches for a sense of pride. No, I'm going to do this, and here's why, and I don't like the church down the street. And one of the things I would tell your millennial and your Gen Z leaders and listeners is that one of the things coming out of the pandemic that's a very positive thing, with so many churches having shut down and more really needing to, is that we're no longer just doing church for the over 60 crowd or the under 30 crowd, that more and more churches are realizing the benefit of being a multi-generational church family.
That's it.
And there are challenges. A line I stole from Andy Stanley on a different topic that works here is when we look at that, that's not a problem to be solved. That's a tension to be managed. You know, there are still certain music style tensions that exist. We can find ways to work through that together, not around that, but through that. But I think that there's a lot to be said about the multi-generational aspect of doing church together instead of just doing church for the elderly or just doing church for the under 30 crowd. I was privileged to spend some time in China a few years ago, and that's how they do all of life in all of their communities, because you get the wisdom from the matriarchs and the patriarchs, and you get the energy of the youth, and they're finding a way to create this whole new Chinese culture that I found fascinating.
We'll pause right here, David. On the other side of this Zoom, we'll restart this. I want to talk about millennials and Gen Z and mental health. So we'll pause here and we'll be right back. Okay, so welcome back, everyone, to the Trig Podcast of Joy. I'm here with Dr. David Harris, who is an expert in church health and also in communication and preaching. Before the break, David, we were talking briefly, we just got into it, about a very, I think, relevant and speaking a real topic of basically of grieving and of restarting. And I specifically wanted to ask about millennials. As you mentioned, I would say 90% of my audience are millennials and Gen Z, the 30 and under crowd, because of music and hip hop and some of the things that I'm involved with. Those are the kids that tend to follow this program.
Okay.
And as you said, they don't have the bandwidth. Maybe our generation would say they don't even have the interest in their parents' generation or their parents' Oldsmobile. They've seen it fail. They've seen it maybe work, but they don't really, they're interested more in what I've seen is in us passing the baton. I would say second, and this has been my personal experience the last 2 years as a volunteer, is to mentor them. Like, please help me. Just be here with me. One of my young pastors that I've been working with these last 2 years, she's 34, only been to a tier of Bible college. I have way more education than he even cares to have. But what he asked me, I mean, I did teach a Bible study and some of that. He wanted me to be in the water at Pirates Cove to help him baptize 21 people because he didn't know how to do that. Mm-hmm. He didn't know what to say. He was scared. He was nervous. He's 34, his first ministry assignment, never done this before. And he just, we were in the water, and this is very tender to me. We were in the water, and he's a pastor. You know, I'm just the bass player. I'm just a volunteer, just there to support him. And I'm just waiting for the pastor to do his thing, right? He's literally just frozen. There's like 50 people watching, the whole Pirates Cove beach, all these people watching. These families are in the water with us. The waves are like almost turning us over. And he's just frozen. And I looked at him and I said, do you want me to do it? And he's like, yeah. And so I went through my thing. So that's something beautiful that at least I've seen in some of the younger pastors. But what are you noticing from Gen Z millennial church leaders? What do they need? What are their dreams and visions when it comes to church health?
Well, first of all, I want to back up a step and say, let's just not slip right past 21 people got baptized, right? So this this ministry and this pastor are doing something incredibly well. They're baptizing 21 people at once. In terms of what I'm seeing in Gen Z, first of all, for those of you from Gen Z, remember I told you I was going to talk real to you. I understood some things. One of the knocks against Gen Z is that Gen Z doesn't want to be committed and they don't want to sacrifice, that they were used to getting some things handed to them, but sometimes they were handed to them as consolation prizes for things that they should have received from a different side of the equation and they weren't. And so that became the way that they were placated through a situation. And so their reputation is they don't want to be committed and they don't want to stick to something. Mm-hmm. And as that relates to living it out in ministry, I see an awful lot of Gen Z worship leaders, church planters, staff persons who want everything now. Mm. They want to be on stage as the worship leader, or they the primary communicator now. And there's something to be said for having that ambition and yet harnessing that ambition under a little bit of discernment. And so being patient, and patience is not something that comes naturally to me genetically. I have some of my grandmother and my father in me. I'm not. And so I have a little bit of experience here too, is be a little bit patient and continue to ask great questions. And if you ask great questions, it'll lead to enhanced an understanding. And as you enhance your understanding, then you'll see increased opportunity instead of just expecting to have opportunity. Ask the questions, be a learner, and be a grower. And then that your inquisitiveness is going to lead to some understanding. You're going to gain some wisdom. And then people are going to begin to believe in you. And I'm not talking 15 years from now, I'm talking 2 or 3 years from now. And you'll have opportunity that you don't have today. And some of the things that you desire and you are striving to achieve are going to happen, and are going to happen in the broad scope of things when you look at your life 40 years from now, much more quickly than you might have imagined they were happening in real time. And so I think there's a huge benefit to that. And then stick to something. If somebody comes along with brighter lights or $5 more on the paycheck, don't just bounce. Take some time to discern what God's trying to say. And the other thing I want to say about Gen Z, if I can, is this generation has got two things going against it. One, they are the most unchurched generation in my lifetime. Secondly, they are also the generation since baby boomers who are the most open to spiritual things. Now, in the church world, spiritual doesn't necessarily, in this context, equate to Christian. It's any kind of spiritual influence. So here's what I think that post-pandemic era is giving us an opportunity to do with this particular generation is if they truly are open to spiritual things, then I think that we should go out of our ways to make Christianity interesting to them instead of as a rule of judgment upon them. And because if we can let them see the beauty of Jesus and the hope of Jesus and the relevancy of Jesus and the goodness of Jesus and the direction that's going to lead your life as you follow Jesus, so somewhat the benefit of following Jesus, not just for eternity, but in the here and now, why would they not compare Jesus to everything else and go, this is a no-brainer? I'm getting the luxury instead of settling for this just because I can afford this. Jesus has it all. And so they are open to spiritual conversations. What we cannot do is we cannot be defensive. We cannot talk down to them, and they will not settle for pat answers. And so we have to engage in real dialogue. And sometimes we have to look at them and say, you know, I don't know the answer to that question. Can I get back to you? But I do appreciate you asking it, and work together with them, because ultimately the goal is not for me to be right. The goal is for me to be in right relationship with them, and ultimately for them to see the benefit of being in right relationship with Jesus. Mm-hmm. So they're open to all the spiritual things, and they may go through, you know, I can remember years ago, and I'm dating myself a little bit, when the material girl became the Kabbalah girl, right? Madonna said, I'm going to do this, and she became the Kabbalah girl. She never even considered Christianity. And so we've got to do a better job of representing Jesus to this generation.
I totally agree with that. Working with them these last, well, it's been about 8-9 years, but the last 2 years, especially post-pandemic, I've realized for example, trans and LGBTQ issues, just to get to the actual things that they're dealing with, or loving Muslims or Jewish, to your point of spirituality, or whether it's third eye and chakras, et cetera, you really have to, or OnlyFans and promiscuity. I mean, the whole gamut of those two or three topics.
Right.
I've realized that in my teaching, as I mentioned, I teach on Wednesday nights, a discipleship night. Those are the things that I bring up as, quote, illustrations, as we used to call them. So my illustrations aren't my kids and I having a Bible study. It's more of how I engage someone that's trans. And because I am in a public school system, talk about illustrations. I have so many stories.
Yeah, you do.
Of these topics that are firsthand that have given me, I mean, I've gone through the whole gamut from repulsing it to hate, to judgment, to compassion, to kindness, to grace, to truth in the middle of grace. In the public school system, of course, it's very, you can't do much. But in the church, my point is that millennials that I am finding connect to our church are the ones where you bring up these topics and you wrestle with them live in real time, IRL, as they would call it, in real life. And it isn't a class or something that's just hushed, talked about in the parking lot. These are the things that they're dealing with. I've never said OnlyFans more in my whole life in the last year. I mean, I still feel like I'm cringing when I say these things, but they're like right with me when I talk about a young 18-year-old who's on OnlyFans making $10,000 a month. And now here's the thing. It's not just relevancy. It's bringing the gospel into that. Where we would bring the gospel to, Sunday school or contemporary versus traditional or outreach to the niños in Mexico. They want our gospel to be speaking to these issues of trans, of I have my Muslim friend or my Jewish partner, or yeah, as I said, LGBTQ issues, OnlyFans, all these things, or the lust of the eyes in terms of money. In terms of success, status, likes, and fame, and why am I not a millionaire at 19? And all that comes with the pursuit of that, I work with a lot of Christian rappers, and the thing that they're always dealing with is the lust of the eyes when it comes to the chains and the cars. And truth be told, most of the videos that we produce, they include all those things, chains and cars. And I often cringe and I think, wow, like, is this just repeating what the world was doing in the 80s and 90s in the name of Jesus, in the name of relevancy? And that's where I'm beginning to press in. And they don't like it when I say, hey, guys, because I am the mentor. I say, why are we showing our Mercedes in this video as we talk about Jesus? oh, pastors, we want to reach that next generation. I said, yeah, but that's the same thing that we would say back in the 80s and 90s on, oh, we want to be relevant. And we started to wash down the gospel. We started to just talk about spirituality or the universe, not about Jesus. What do you think are the dangers of Gen Z churches with regards to either addressing these topics of LGBTQ, et cetera, without any truth, or ignoring them?
Yeah, well, I have quite a few thoughts. Let me see if I can filter a few of them down. First thing is the historical American church, at least during my lifetime anyway, was afraid of difficult questions. And I think that one of the benefits, as you were asking about earlier, of the pandemic era, and when we think of 2020, you think of COVID, but I mean, also you had incredible political ugliness. You had major cultural and racial division, and some of those issues are still lingering. And you know, I don't imagine the next political year is going to be any prettier than the last one. But All of that, you had this confluence where it all hit at once. And I think one of the benefits is it's caused the American church to have to be open to listening to questions and then finding healthy ways to address the questions instead of being afraid of the questions, because the questions aren't going away. And then we had to live through some of them. And some questions are better than others. But right now you're using the issues about the lust of the eyes and the LGBTQ and the trans and all of those kinds of things. One of the things that I would encourage your quintessential 20-something who listens to your podcast, David, and you do a phenomenal job of it, by the way, for what it's worth.
Thank
to you.
Thank you so much.
Is some of the things that you might see as success, there is an enemy out there fighting against you who sees as entrapment. So you get entrapped into an understanding of what life and lifestyle and success are supposed to look like. And so then the goal of your life is X amount of money, or X amount of notches on your bedpost, or X amount of vehicles in your garage, or homes in your portfolio. In and of themselves, except for the one, there's nothing wrong with those things. But when they become the desire of your heart, that means that they are overriding what should be the true desire of your heart, and that is the love and goodness of God through His Son, Jesus Christ. And it becomes an entrapment. And then something goes wrong, your career, your music project, your marriage gets derailed. And then you spend the rest of your time entrapped in trying to get that, which can lead to debt, which can lead to potential dead-end relationships, which can lead to you spending all of your time in pursuit of those things. And again, with the exception of the notches in the bedpost, in and of themselves, nothing wrong with those things. It's just that the pursuit of those things has overridden the pursuit of God. And the Bible says that when we pursue God, then all things become possible to us. Yes. And so allow God to take what you have, the talent that He's allowed you to enjoy here on earth, and you steward it towards Him, and you can still have some of the other blessing and the benefit. But then I would encourage you to employ the word discernment into how much of that benefit is healthy. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do something. Just because you have access to something doesn't mean that something is beneficial or bettering to you and your life. And so understanding God's call and purpose on your life, and all of us have that, not just pastors or worship leaders or children. Every single person who's ever taken a breath on planet Earth has a purpose from God and is gifted and wired to achieve that purpose.
Yes.
And so the betterment, there's nothing wrong with it, but the benefit comes from when the betterment is yielded to the purpose of God, and then all these things come and work together for good.
That's amazing.
That would be my 2-minute insight.
Powerful. I love everything that you said there. Two more topics, and maybe we can wrap this up, that I think are very relevant, again, to my audience. Mental health and biblical manhood. We'd end with the easy ones.
Yeah.
So let me start with biblical manhood, or toxic masculinity, as the Red Pill movement, if you're familiar with the RP movement, and Andrew Tate and Fresh and Fit. So in the last year, post-pandemic again, this Red Pill movement has just blown up on YouTube and TikTok. And what I mean by that, for maybe those that may not know what I'm talking about, is the Andrew Tate phenomena that comes from churches and young people feeling like no one is valuing what true masculinity means, and that churches, religions have mostly served women and become feminized or feminine in terms of what they do, LGBTQ issues, back to that, the Me Too movement, that all men are evil and toxic, and not to, of course, take away from some of the horrors, but the pendulum having swung so much pro-feminism that men are no longer valued. Now, here's where it meets the road. So again, I teach math and English at high schools here in LA Unified. And so there was this young 17-year-old Hispanic, very good-looking young man. He raps, so we got talking about music. And then one day he asked me if there was any positive music that I could recommend to him. I said, oh, of course. So I gave him some of my guys, and he loved it. One day he stopped coming to school. I asked his friend, he said he got his girlfriend pregnant. And so then he came back for a couple of days. We're on the bleachers talking, and he was very too rude in terms of what he could have done better and very graphic for my taste. But it was all part of him working out what he wished he had done differently and not getting his girlfriend pregnant. Long story short, he was talking about depression and suicide. He quit school. I don't know what's happened to him. I hope that those songs that I gave him or some of my artists were an encouragement to him. But part of what he kept telling me was how his mental health was suffering, but how he didn't feel valued for being the man that he wanted to be. He felt like he was being emasculated, guilt-tripped for dropping out of school. He wasn't valued for trying to be a provider. He didn't know what being a man really meant. He just thought it was about having sex with girls and having babies or having chains and gold and selling drugs. He lacked a father in his home, et cetera, et cetera. The schools didn't teach him anything about being a man. What are you seeing in terms of that, in terms of young generations and biblical manhood? And what do you think is the biblical response to men in church?
Well, great, great question, and a whole lot of layers to this. Yeah. A year ago in March, I was back in the Midwest, and I was speaking at a kind of a decent-sized youth conference.
Yeah.
And they had asked me if I would spend a couple of sessions speaking from a biblical perspective on anxiety and mental health. And I spent some time addressing those. But I went to the camp, the conference director, after I'd spoken. I was doing four general sessions for them. And after I did Friday night, I just went to him and I said, instead of doing what I plan to speak on tomorrow morning, there was such a response for prayer and for help and with the cabin counselors and stuff there at this conference center that I said, I got messages to each of the cabin counselors. And I said, have each person take a 3x5 card and write one or two questions that they would like to know on this topic, which was about as broad as the things you were asking me. And I will answer them live and unrehearsed tomorrow morning in front of the General Assembly. Oof. Yeah. Scary. It's the most scared I've ever been since you mentioned that I do communication stuff. And I was on a panel sitting in front of about 1,200 college students who could ask anything they wanted. And all the cultural questions seemed to come to me. And so I addressed those. And I had most of the questions had to do with either mental health, sexual identity, or in what I believe is the byproduct of sexual identity. And that is what you're calling this masculine Christianity and stuff. Yeah. And so to come to the masculine Christianity, I mentioned a little bit ago, the importance of churches going back to the basics.
Yes.
And one of the entrapments that goes along with some of the things that we would consider successful here in our culture is we allow culture to define who we are as people instead of allowing God to define who we are as people.
Yes.
And the most masculine person ever on earth was Jesus.
Wow.
And it's like, you know, when you think about what Jesus could have done.
Wow.
And in terms of the deity on earth and what Jesus chose to do in accepting his humanity on earth, you see all kinds of courage, all kinds of strength. Man. You see Jesus who had incredible empathy and sympathy when that was appropriate. You see the anger of Jesus when he got mad at religious leaders who were taking advantage of the average church persons, and he drove them out with a cat of nine tails, similar to which would lay his flesh open during Passion Week, and he would take my sin on his back. And allow it to be nailed on the cross with him. Yes. And so you've got all of that kind of stuff going on. Mm. And so, and yet there's this tenderness and there's this love. And here's what I think. I think across the board, ethnicity aside, almost.
I agree. Ethnicity aside.
Fatherlessness is a huge issue. Even if you've got the family dynamic intact, the family of origin, as we would call it, you've got moms and dads who are both out working because of inflation and the economy. And so you still have a sense of fatherlessness. And here's something it is. I spent a little bit of time, like 5 years, working in juvenile probation and juvenile social work. And so I stay just out of my own interest. I stay up on some of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And for your Gen Z listeners, your 20 somethings, mm-hmm. here's what I know. Every little girl finds her self-worth in the eyes of her dad. Yeah. And what she does with her life will be determined by what she saw reflected back in the eyes of her father. Mm. Every single one of them. Mom, they love you. They respect what you do. They may even be a mommy's girl. Mm. But who she's going to be 20 years from now, she finds in the eyes of her father.
Wow.
And so dads, sometimes one of the greatest lies that my demographic, my age bought into when we were younger is when it comes to parenting, it's not about the quantity of time, it's the quality of time. That's a crock.
Yeah.
Kids just want time.
Yeah.
And so you have this lack of example across the board ethnically. And I readily acknowledge that it's a little bit more of an issue in some ethnicities than it is others, but it can look differently and still have the same effect.
Yes.
Whether it's complete absenteeism or vocational absenteeism or emotional absenteeism. And then, you know, I have to also realize that, you know, in my case, my dad, who man who loved Jesus, great provider, hard worker, but he grew up with an extreme alcoholic father. So my dad had some anger issues that he, you know, he was trying to process while he was figuring out how to raise three kids, right? And so nobody's parents get it exactly right. So we have to give a little bit of grace because we're going to want the same grace when we're their age. But this whole issue, and then on those topics, a lot of those topics on those 3x5 cards, David, came back dealing with LGBTQ issues, transgender issues. And one of the things, I anticipated that. And so I went to the conference coordinators, some youth specialists, and said, let's flesh this out for just a second. I expect I'm going to get some of that. And I want you to understand where I'm coming from. And I want to make sure I'm not violating any of the conference code here.
Yeah.
Is a lot of the folks who are dealing with what we would call sexual identity issues. It's not a matter of whether you're heterosexual or homosexual or looking to be transgender. At this age in your maturity, it's more like sexual confusion because of all the influences that you're exposed to. And we can't be naive. You can't just hide from all the influences. You walk through the mall, there are mannequins in the window. You turn on YouTube, you go on your favorite social media channel, even in, you know, television shows that my wife and I would watch. You can't hide from it. So rather than stick our heads in the sand, let's pull our heads out of the sand and let's address it head on. But a lot of this is the influence that's creating what I call sexual confusion, not an established sexual identity. Mm-hmm. And I think churches should do a better job of embracing this, and not just through their youth pastors. I think from the pulpit and senior pastors. I was speaking at a church in Kentucky a few years ago, and I did. Somebody had picked up a message I had on sexuality and sex and stuff off of my table at the time. And they listened to it and then asked me, could you come back and do this message? Because I've gone to this church my whole life and never heard our pastor do one message on sex or human sexuality.
Wow, that's awesome.
And the Bible's got a lot to say about that. And I think we are doing a great disservice to our culture and to our up-and-coming generations by not addressing it from a biblical perspective. Because if you don't create the narrative, someone else will create the narrative for you.
Yeah.
And we have God's narrative for what's best for human sexuality. Now, mm-hmm. there's a whole lot of underlying stuff. There are abuse cases, and there are different things that lead into stuff. And some men are just born with more effeminate tendencies. And I don't mean that in a bad way. They just are. Okay, but we can still work with that. And so we're not going to deny that's there, but I'm talking in the main, okay? I'm not talking about the one or two one-offs that somebody might be imagining while I'm talking. So, but I come back to Jesus on this issue, and I know that sounds trite and cliche, but if your viewers would actually spend a couple of hours doing a qualified understanding of who Jesus really is and mm-hmm. see the compassion and the kindness and the tenderness and yet see the strength and the courage and the humility,
yeah.
it all comes up into deity personified and what I want to be more of in my life. And it'll answer a lot of the questions. Now, your listeners don't live in a vacuum. Your math students still have to go to a LA Unified School District and deal with, you know, I don't know if your generation still uses this or not, peer pressure, right?
Oh yeah, sure.
But you still got to deal with all of that. And that's where high capacity youth pastors and youth groups, and I think youth groups that transcend just local churches, I think our churches need to do a better job of coming together for the good of the youth in our community.
Yes.
And instead of just the good for the youth in church ABC.
Yep.
And find the kind of things to do on an ongoing basis, whatever that looks like. Mm-hmm. Our church partnered with several churches here in the greater Phoenix area when I was still pastoring this time last year. Every Thursday night, we take a bus out to the areas of Phoenix that are known to have a lot of prostitution. And we literally bring prostitutes on this bus, separate them from their Johns, find out if they need clothing, do they need deodorant, do they need toothpaste, do they need underwear, whatever, socks, and give that to them. But we always ask them, if you don't want to go back out there, you have these items, you're free to go. We'll give you some more next week if you need them. But if you want to leave this life, would you let us know? And we'll drive away right now. Yep. We've been shot at. But that's the kind of stuff. But then we had a pretty strong young adults group, you know, the 20 somethings. And all of a sudden this became their passion.
Yeah.
And they were giving this Thursday nights of their lives to go do this. It was amazing. So you got to give people something bigger to live for than what they're settling for.
Yeah. It's so beautiful what you said. All those things are exactly right. And what my experience, maybe an encouragement to established pastors, older pastors, elder boards,
sure,
is to engage these topics. There isn't as much of a stigma as there was in the past about engaging the topics. The stigma is when you don't. The disconnect is when you don't, as a pastor, engage these topics. That would be the first thing I would say. Second is, don't be afraid that you don't know the answers or you're not up on the latest thing. There is nothing new under the sun. It's still promiscuity, fornication, adultery. It's still the same things that Jesus and even in the Old Testament. I mean, these things have been around. So don't be afraid of the topics because you don't know what OnlyFans is. It's look it up and you'll be disgusted to know. But it's the same thing as always. Here's the hope. The third thing is, to your point, the answer is Jesus. The answer is biblical truth. The answer is what you already know in your heart, what changed you when you were a young kid or an adult or a teenager. The same truth is what people today in 23 and 2024 need, what my high school kids need. It's the same truth. So you already have that knowledge and the understanding and the compassion. You already have experienced that grace that changed you when you were a kid, or maybe what you saw in your kids or the struggles that they went through. You already have the answer within you, in the Word of God, in the Spirit, in the church that you pastor. But you have to enter it from that first thing I said, is you have to enter it from the engagement position to engage them in these topics. And as I said, you might not be ready to do it as a 10-week series on LGBTQ and trans and Jesus. Maybe that's not quite where you're at. But whether it's a Wednesday night or maybe it is a Sunday morning, I would encourage you to do Sunday mornings and to train your existing parishioners or your church congregants and say, hey, here's what we're doing and why. Explain it to them. But to engage it from the beginning, because as you mentioned, these young people are listening and learning and believing these things already. They don't have any shyness or aversion to hearing these things in church. In fact, they would be so drawn to you if you were to say OnlyFans is a sin or OnlyFans is promiscuity. Have an opinion. It doesn't have to be just simply relevancy and saying, well, I understand and whatever you want. No, don't do that. Don't just simply say, hey, whatever goes, it's your truth. No. Don't do that. Speak into these issues. Speak your wisdom, God's wisdom, through your understanding. And as you said, if you don't know, then ask other people, bring people that do know, or do some research, go watch some videos, ask some of your Christian leaders that are in the culture to maybe educate you, to co-speak with you, have them on a panel, have them on a YouTube video. ask them to be the resource, the resources that you need, but engage it from the beginning and address the topics head on. And then you will gain credibility. And most of all, you will be able to share the gospel. The truth is still the truth. It's still Jesus on a cross and risen for our salvation. It's still Jesus dying for our sins and forgiving us of all of these iniquities. It's the same gospel. And that's why we believe that this is a truth, because it works no matter what we're going through, no matter what things are in the culture. The gospel changes and redeems and revives the heart. And so I would just encourage maybe, quote, your listeners or, you know, just more established churches to engage these things. People are in need. They're desperate. I mean, this young man that I mentioned, but I'm thankful that even though I don't know where he is, that I gave him those songs with Christian lyrics from a hip hop kind of genre that hopefully he can listen to before. I don't know what's happening now. Maybe I'll see him again. Engage these young people. Give them the truth. Talk about these topics on a Sunday morning, and you will see people come and hear the gospel of Jesus, and you will see your heart stay fresh and young, and you will, like Joel says, you know, the young will see new visions and the old will see new visions as well. That is the heart of God. He's not saying just pack it up, older pastor. He's saying no, pray for new revelations. And these issues are so prevalent today. Just ask Jesus for new revelation, how to address these topics, address them, because Jesus is still the answer.
When Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life," one of the things that's come to mean to me in the 21st century in a post-pandemic era is that truth always trumps trends. Inside the church and outside the church. Yep. Inside the church, trends might be worship styles or dress styles or you know, small group versus Sunday school curriculum styles. Outside the church, it is fashion, it is sexuality, it is business, it is IT. But truth always trumps trends. And yet, when you take that position, you'll find just how cool it is that truth then gets expressed in the midst of trends. And so I just think that's a great thing that you're doing. And the fact that you're engaging people from all musical genres and God's given you that mission field, David, I absolutely commend you and the work that you're doing while you're teaching some math to students. I'm somewhat mathematically challenged. I can spell okay. I just don't add and subtract so great. But that the work that you do with music from all genres and then the influence God's given you and the bridges that you're building, you know, somebody's got to plant the seeds, somebody's got to water the seed, and eventually it goes into a full-blown harvest. And it takes a while, in a lot of people's lives. And the younger listeners, especially with the different things that are going on, the voices that are vying, not just for our attention, but for our souls. It's multifaceted. I want you to hear me say, it's multi-layered. I don't have pat answers for everything you're going through. And I'm working hard at discerning the different tiers of understanding complexity that you're having to navigate. And I had to navigate the ones that were there in my era. David had to navigate the ones in there in his era. And I'm working hard to understanding the ones that are in your era. OnlyFans, it's a big deal. And if you're a young man or a young lady and you know that you can make $10,000 a week or a month by, you know, showing your feet, so to speak, you know, it's hard to go say, well, I'm going to go to college and, you know, go into debt for $100,000 when I can make this kind of money at the age of 18 or 21 or whatever. So it's complex. I respect the complexities that you're dealing with. And I still come back to the basics of what scriptures have to say through Jesus.
That's it. Well, I think we are almost to the end of our convo, David. I want to just to ask you the last few minutes here. I know that people are being stirred by your work. They may want to have you be a guest speaker or maybe follow you on social media. How can people get a hold of you?
Oh, I appreciate you asking. If you're interested, I don't know all the numbers. I'm David Harris in Scottsdale, Arizona. If you'll find me on Facebook, on Twitter or Instagram, Dr. David C. Harris. You can find me at using that handle at both Twitter and Instagram, and my email address. You can reach me at dharris@tmchurches.org. dharris@tmchurches.org. I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to be a guest on one of your podcasts or vlogs or something. And I just appreciate and invite David to be a guest on your show too. He does a phenomenal job of being the host, but I know that he's got some material and some wisdom he'd like to share as well. And he can do it in another language and I cannot do that. So.
Gloria a Dios. Yes, that's right. Yeah. Well, and when can we get you, David, to start your own podcast or your own content on YouTube? Are you there already?
No, you know what? I've started and stopped. It's not an interest thing or confidence thing. I need somebody like yourself to walk with me through the mechanics, and I would start this thing next week if I could, because I've got some interesting stuff coming up between now and the end of the year that I would love to share with the world, not for my own self-promoting benefit, but because I think I can contribute to some things that your listeners such as yours might appreciate.
Oh, wow. Well, I'd love to help you, and maybe we can talk later about it.
And I'd love to come back and be a guest again.
Absolutely. You're welcome back for sure.
I appreciate it.
Well, I want to thank everybody for being here on this episode. I think that you have learned that we really care, and that David and the churches that he represents and just him as a human being, he really cares about you. And you, the listener, wherever you're listening from, wherever you're going through, know that we really care, and that we as a Church of Jesus Christ are here to equip you as a young pastor, as a young leader, as a musician and creative. We understand your journey. The things that we're talking about today are the things that we are wrestling with daily here in my podcast, as well as I know what David is doing. And we invite you to stay tuned. Make sure that you follow David on the links at the bottom of this episode. All his links that he mentioned will be there, so you can follow him and email him. And most of all, just know that he really cares about what you're dealing with, and that he's building healthy churches through the grace of God and the Holy Spirit that can address some of these topics, not just simply to address them and to leave them there, but to equip young church leaders to see them come to salvation, to see them get baptized and build healthy families for years to come. So again, thank you, David, for being here. And for all of you, thank you for being here. And I will see you next time.
It's good to be with you. Thanks. Goodbye now.
Thank you, David.